Alrighty. 2 Samuel 13, a lot of this is narrative, and so not usually stuck with a verse or two during this through this section. But what you've seen happen here, of course, is Absalom had a sister named Tamar, and as we saw last time, Amnon defiled her, and the horrible, you know, the story, these stories get, after a while, after a few weeks, they get kind of depressing. But we'll get through this soon enough. It's just that there, you know, there are lessons here. And, you know, so as we go on down, as you know, he defiled his sister. Verse 15, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. Just wanted to get rid of her. You learn here in all this, of course, kind of a disjointed lesson that, sadly, you can never undo what you did. You know, you can't unhear or unsee or undo what has been done. And so it ought to drive home the great verity that what needs to happen is to just avoid it. Right? Now, in this passage, you have back in 13:1, Amnon loved her, he said. Verse 4, he loved her. But surely by now you know, and if you're young and maybe are still influenced too much by romantic novels and stuff, I hope you know that love is more than an emotion and animal attraction. Okay? Because God commended his love to us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And that's God, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ, plainly. But the commitment and actions are what tell that somebody loves. Not just saying so and being all, you know, hyped up passionately with it and allowing the emotions to rule things. But that should be obvious. Verse 16, she said unto him, there is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. At least that's her perspective. But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, put now this woman, she's suddenly a this woman, out from me and bolt the door after her. That shows you that you have to be careful because there are people that will use you like merchandise. And I don't just mean after the scenario here, but, you know, 2 Peter 2 talks about false teachers who just make merchandise of you. That's to Christians. And so to some, you're no more than a number. I mean, we all know that to most politicians, we're a vote, right? And a taxpayer. But for so many teachers or preachers, you're really just kind of merchandise. You're there. You fill a slot and a few bucks in the plate, and you know, you help blow his head up bigger. But it's that. She's a this woman now, suddenly. Verse 18. She had a garment of diverse colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? So he either heard it or sniffed it out, figured it out. But hold now thy peace, my sister, he is thy brother. And so sounds like, you know, he's advising her to do nothing, which he did. But he's intending to do something. Verse 20. Regard not this thing, he continues. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother's house, Absalom's house. So he's taking care of her. Verse 21. But when King David heard all these things, he was very wroth. Okay, so he heard about it and still took no action. He is racked by guilt. He has been rendered largely inactive in some things like this because of how guilty he is and everything. And so that's something you probably don't count on when you frivolously do wrong. Right. Verse 22, and Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. So he hated Amnon. Now, David committed the sins that he committed. And one thing for sure, I mean, David sowed a lot of hatred. Ahithophel hated David. I'll remind you why. Look in 2 Samuel 11. 2 Samuel 11. Ahithophel, formerly a friend of David, grew to hate David. He didn't use that word, those words, but 2 Samuel chapter 13. I'm sorry, 2 Samuel 11. And down in verse 3. Now notice, David sent and inquired after the woman. So this is describing Bathsheba. One said, is not this Bathsheba, okay, the daughter of Eliam? So just remember, she's Eliam's daughter, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Okay, well, Eliam, again, I know we did this recently, 2 Samuel 23 then. 2 Samuel 23. 2 Samuel 23, go down to verse 34. The long list of David's mighty men, and among them, down in verse 34, is listed Eliphelet, the son of Ahazbi, the son of the Maacathite, then Eliam. That's Eliam, that is Bathsheba's dad, right? And Eliam is the son of Ahithophel. So, probably unbeknownst to David, he defiled Ahithophel's granddaughter. And so Ahithophel hated David. David sowed seed that resulted in hatred. And then Absalom hated Amnon and killed him. And then Absalom eventually grew to hate David, right? You know what you wonder about? It never says Eliam's reaction to it, his daughter. And maybe he was a mighty man that was killed in battle somewhere. I'm not sure. But it doesn't mention anything about him. And did you ever wonder how Bathsheba feels about it? What a complicated set of emotions must have run through Bathsheba's heart for this time where she's been taken, defiled, her husband, is killed, murdered by David, and now she's married to the guy, and, you know, all this is going on. So you have to wonder, you know, how that all goes. But down in the Bible doesn't really comment on it. We would, if a human had written the book, we would have had the grand soap opera. It would have been Dallas all over again. You know, as the world churns, as the stomach churns, or as whatever churns, there'd be chapter after chapter of all these things, and God doesn't feed that kind of stuff very much in the book. He's very brusque and tells you what happened, and if there's something he wants to expand on so that you know, that's why you know that a lot of what you get with Abraham, Moses, and David is very important stuff because it covers so much of the Bible. You know, the Bible just mentions Abraham over and over again, and it mentions Moses over and over again, and David wrote such huge sections and is, you know, narrated through his life in so such big sections. You know God wants you to get stuff out of there. Verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years, notice the time passage. The uncomfortable thing about sin is because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore are the hearts of the sons of men fully set in them to do evil. You know, by the time you reap for something you did, it may have been 2 or 3 years. And so that's, again, the seriousness of sin. It came to pass after 2 full years, verse 23, that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. So he wants to get all the men together, all his dad, all his brothers and so on, and they're going to have a little men's outing like we're going to have on Friday. And hopefully on Friday nobody gets killed. I don't intend to kill anybody, just so you know. But, you know, he's going to get all this together, and he's got a plan in the back of his mind. Now, it makes me wonder, because he does invite David, right? Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant." You wonder, he's planning something for Amnon, right? You wonder, since he's not real happy that David did nothing, right? You wonder if he has some plans for David. And the Bible doesn't comment. And verse 25, "And the king said to Absalom, Nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee." You know, David just doesn't feel like going. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. You know, Absalom might be viewed as trying to reconnect with David. And maybe he doesn't yet intend to kill Amnon, but because David doesn't go, then he winds up sprouting that idea. I'm not quite sure. Maybe Absalom was trying to reconnect with his dad. I'm not sure about that either. But whatever's the case, David refused to go. Verse 27, "And Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him." And so he did talk David into letting Amnon and all the king's sons go. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, "Mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto thee, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." Okay, well, here you have Absalom abusing his power over his servants. So David, another one of those sowing things, David abuses his power over Uriah the Hittite and Bathsheba. Joab then abuses his power. David uses Joab to abuse Joab's power to have the men retreat from Uriah the Hittite's side. So Uriah is killed. Amnon abuses power over Tamar. Absalom abuses power over Amnon and murders him. Then he abuses his power with people and tries to take David's throne, an insurrection. And in time, the last brother in the bunch, Adonijah, undertakes to abuse his power and steal David's Abishag. So, you know, you have these things where, you know, David sows hatred, and then David sows an abuse of power, and it all comes back in, you know, in avalanches. Verse 29, "And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man gat him upon his mule and fled." And I guess the thought there is, all of a sudden, this gaggle of men are going along and everything's going fine. And then all of a sudden, everybody's throwing spears and arrows at Amnon. And none of the rest of the sons know if they're going to be a target too. So they all get on a mule and leave, right? But the idea is Absalom is just after Amnon. Verse 30, "Came to pass while they were in the way that tidings came to David, saying, Absalom hath slain all the king's sons, and there is not one of them left." So there is gossip's inaccuracy. Somehow word got back and everybody's dead. Verse 31, "Then the king arose and tear his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent." And here's the dude again. "And Jonadab, the son of Shemaiah, David's brother." Now this is the instigator that got all this going. This is the guy. True enough, Amnon, fomented some things in his own heart. That much is true, but he wasn't smart enough to figure out how to get it done. So Jonadab, his friend, helped him. You don't need friends like that. And I don't know. The Bible says back in chapter 13, verse, what is it, 3, that Jonadab is a very subtle man, so that is a type of the devil. And so he typifies the devil in that maybe Jonadab maybe he wasn't trying to play the devil's advocate here, but whatever's the case, the devil knows what's going on, and he's a type of the devil. So, let not my Lord, he says in verse 32, Jonadab the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my Lord suppose that they have slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. Well, how do you know? Were you in on it? Were you the one, since you put that in Amnon's heart, was it you that put that in Absalom's heart too? If that's the case, then Jonadab isn't even a friend to Amnon. Well, you knew that already, but he's not even loyal to Amnon, the guy whose life he destroyed, right? And maybe for all we know, I can't say, and the Bible doesn't say, but for all we know, Jonadab was the brains behind Absalom killing his brother. Told him how to do that. Well, yeah, get them together, go with the sheep shearers and have a cookout and just kill him. Verse 32, and now he's by David's side and smooth talking David. Oh, no, oh, it's not like that. It's another way. Yeah, well, how do you know? Right? David's too grieved to ask, how would you know? Verse 32, let not my Lord suppose that they have slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. Now, you ought to be comforted by that, David. For by the appointment of Absalom, this hath been determined. So if he did put Absalom up to it, he's now going to get the glory for, you know, knowing about it. But he's not going to reveal, of course, that he inspired it. 32. This guy is a glory seeker. He is David's nephew. And so, you know, he thinks he's big chief since he gets to stand by David and advise him. Verse 32. This is by the appointment of Absalom. This hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. At whose advice, you rascal? Right? Oh, I know so much. Yeah, how do you know? Right? This guy's behind some of this, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's behind Absalom doing to Amnon what he did. Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart. I mean, it's just one kid dead. You don't have to worry. Not all of them are dead. To think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. And Absalom fled, and the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said, see, I told you, rascal. And Jonadab said unto the king, behold, the king's sons come as thy servant said, I told you so. Now make sure, David, in your grief to recognize that I gave you something to hope in and that I was right. What a skank, right? Verse 35. And Jonadab said unto the king, behold, the king's sons come as thy servant said, so it is. Told you so. It came to pass as soon as he had made an end of speaking that, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very sore. But Jonadab is interested in the credit. Verse 37. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. Now, this is somebody that Absalom's mom was from among the Jeshurites. Go to 2 Samuel 3 real quick. 2 Samuel 3. This is why you read chronologies a little bit so you can figure out who's connected with who. But telling you about David's sons in 2 Samuel 3, verse 2, and unto David were born, sons were born in Hebron, His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, the second Kileab of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite, the third Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So she's a king's a daughter from among the heathen. And it would have been, he would have met her somewhere along the way. David would have met her in going to battle with the Geshurites or some other dealings he had with them, and wound up, aren't given the account where he married her, but that's Absalom's mom. So verse 37 again, 2 Samuel 13:37. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, the king of Geshur, and David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and was there 3 years, and the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, saying he was dead. So a period of weeping and mourning for a couple of years, and by the time that's passed, he really wishes that he could, you know, have his son back. Well, chapter 14, verse 1. Now, Joab, the son of Zariah. Zariah is David's sister. And as Bryce pointed out a few weeks ago, this is the only, those three boys, Joab, Abishai, and Asahel, are the only guys referred to usually by the chronology of their mother. Apparently, the Lord wants you to know that these three boys were the sons of David's sister. Really bad. Now, Joab, the son of Zariah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. So maybe that's genuine concern. I don't know. Joab is his, what's that make him, his cousin? So they're kin, and so maybe he does genuinely care for him. But as you know, Joab can also be a real rascal in time. And furthermore, he and David are now he's been brought in on this conspiracy where, you know, he now has the knowledge that David has ordered him to kill, you know, Uriah the Hittite. So it's a very uncomfortable relationship. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman. This woman is wise, probably not in the sense of the good wise woman in Proverbs, but in the sense of a worldly wise woman. He's going to go to her because she's going to pretend. She's going to put on some theater and try to talk David into doing what Joab wants him to do. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, and notice, feign thyself to be a mourner. So act like it, pretend. So let's just think about that. David feigned a reason to have Uriah the Hittite home, right? Joab feigned a need to withdraw in the battle from Uriah's side so he could be killed. Amnon feigned sickness to get Tamar into the spider's web. Absalom feigns circumstances around Amnon's murder. He tricks the brothers into coming to this sheep shearer's barbecue. Then there's Jonadab feigning loyalty and concern for Amnon and presumably Absalom and David. It's all theater. All these people are faking it, right? And now Joab and this Tekoan woman are going to go in and try to maneuver David by feigning, by pretending to be something different than they are. It's not a good seed to sow. If you're a drama queen, quit it. Your kids don't need it. Neither your sons nor your daughters, nor do your friends need it. Verse 2. And that goes for you too, men, because there are some men that are drama kings. Just so you know. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman, said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel. I mean, is there anything more disgusting than somebody pretending to mourn? You're crying and bawling and you're not sad at all. And anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. That's a poor substitute for God giving a man something to say. Having a man tell you what to say. Verse 4. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, "Help, O king." And the king said unto her, "What aileth thee?" And she answered, "I am indeed a widow." Woman? Well, if you're faking it, no, you're not. I mean, somebody says, "Let me tell you the truth." That means they weren't going to tell you the truth at first, and maybe they're still not, right? It's kind of like that. King said unto her, "What aileth thee?" Verse 5, and she answered, "I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead." Now, I stop and think about that. They're trying to maneuver David into bringing his son home. But I wonder, when she said, "I am indeed a widow woman," if maybe Bathsheba flashed through David's mind. Because he widowed Bathsheba before he married her. Verse 6. "And thy handmaid had two sons, and they two strove together, like Cain and Abel, and like Amnon and Absalom." And so David is getting the picture. "They two strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, 'Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also, so that they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth.'" So one kid kills the other kid. I have only one son left. The family wants me to turn him over to them so they can kill him. You know, the revengers of blood, even though if it really wasn't a revenger of blood, David should have asked, "Well, why don't you send him to the city of refuge then?" Because Jerusalem's not it, right? But verse 7, so what they're saying is that David shouldn't feel, trying to maneuver David into seeing that he shouldn't have to kill Absalom because of what Absalom did. Verse 8, and the truth is, David should have done something for Amnon, but he was frozen by his grief. "And the king said unto the woman, 'Go to thine house, and I will give charge concerning the attempts to get off, stay on the fence and have her leave, and he'll pray about it, and we'll get back to you.' And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, 'My lord, O king, the iniquity be on me.'" She's saying, please let me just ask you for another thing. "And on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. If you do what I want you to do, no matter if it turns out wrong, I won't blame you." Verse 10, "And the king said, 'Whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee anymore.'" So, you know, anybody gives you trouble, send them to me, I'll take care of it. Then said she, verse 11, "I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldst not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son." She's still sticking with the story. "And he said, 'As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth.' Then the woman said, 'Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king.'" One more word. You've already spoken several words. So just one more thing. "And he said, 'Say on.' And the woman said, 'Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God?'" Now, I don't know about you, but she may be wise, but she's certainly brave. I mean, you will go in and you're pretending and you get the king cornered by his own arguments and you expect this to turn out right. I don't know if I trust that or not, right? So she's got guts anyway. Verse 13, "And the woman said, 'Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one that is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. And we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground." We're all going to die sometime, king. You're wasting time getting to know your son. "Which cannot be gathered up again, neither doth God respect any person." Oh, there's some piety there. "Yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from it." Well, David should have brought justice to Amnon for Amnon's part. And Absalom went way out of line, and, you know, David may feel he can't do anything, but to bring again his banished. Verse 15, "Now therefore that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, it is because the people have made me afraid, and thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform and the request of his handmaid." She's still sticking with her story, even though it's all pretense. "For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. Then thine handmaid said, the word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable, for as an angel of God." Now she's kissing up to him. She's smoothing him over. "For my lord the king is as an angel of God, so is my lord the king, to discern good and bad. Therefore, the Lord thy God will be with thee." Then the king answered and said unto the woman, "David's not stupid. Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee." The woman said, "Let my lord the king now speak." And the king said, "Is not the hand of Joab with thee in this?" David's not stupid, right? The woman answered and said, "As thy soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand nor to the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me, he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid." To fetch about this form of speech, it's all been a theater. It's all been theater. "Hath thy servant Joab done this thing? And my lord is wise according to the wisdom of an angel of God to know all things that are in the earth." And the king said unto Joab, "Behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again." I mean, David's heart is towards him. He wants him back. He yielded to the mini theater and he goes for it. Verse 22, "And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, in that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Jeshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, Let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face." So there's no reconciliation at all. This love-hate thing. I mean, David should have loved Uriah the Hittite and probably did the soldier part, but hated him and killed him because, you know, he was his paramour's husband. So a love-hate thing there. He draws Joab into the same scenario where what commander wouldn't love a great soldier, and yet he had to pull back and kill him, right? Amnon had a love-hate relationship with Tamar. Absalom had a brother named Amnon whom he loved as a brother, but he hated him for what he did, so he killed him. By the time it's over, the son who should love his father wound up being willing to kill his father and commit insurrection against him, David. And David had this love-hate relationship with Absalom too. So it's all these crops that get sown by folks. And the king said, verse 24, "Let him turn into his own house and let him not see my face." So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. But in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom. For his beauty, from the sole of his foot even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. I mean, he was a supermodel in his own right. Look at somebody else that's like that. We've talked about Jonadab, who was a type of the devil. Well, let's go see somebody else. Look at Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28, Absalom is beautiful. Perfect complexion, you know, perfectly manicured, and no moles and warts. I mean, he is just beautiful and knows it. 28:12, "Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and saying to him, thus saith the Lord God, thou sealest up the sum full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. Who is this? The king of Tyrus, you say. Well, thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. When was the king of Tyrus in Eden, the garden of God? He never was. He's addressing the devil through the king of Tyrus. That tells you that in the Lord's, from what the Lord said, is that the devil is perfect in beauty. And he's wiser than Daniel. And he is transformed into an angel of light. So don't expect a red-horned, be-tailed devil show up with minor music playing in the background, minor key in a minor key, laughing like, whoa! That's not how he's going to show up. Eve didn't exactly turn and run like a scalded cat when the devil shows up. Okay? So he's beautiful. He's wise. He's convincing. He's a nice guy. Until he gets you. Back to verse 25 of 2 Samuel 14. Covered a lot of ground tonight, didn't we? But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot even to the crown of his head there was no blemish in him. And when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, so he had got a haircut, because the hair was heavy on him. I mean, he had a full head of hair, plainly. Therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. I don't know how much hair that is, but my center column in my Bible is trying to help me out. So you tell me if they have this right. To them, 200 shekels after the king's weight is 6 pounds and a quarter. 6 pounds of hair? That's a lot of hair. I mean, that's a big wad of hair. And I don't buy it. I don't think he had 6 pounds of hair. I think it's the little Greek goblins, little Greek gremlins trying to help you out. Little Hebrew gremlins trying to help you out, right? They don't know what they're talking about. Verse 27. And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. Now it says there that he had 3 sons and 1 daughter. This is supposed to be a great contradiction in the King James Bible. Look in 2 Samuel 18. 2 Samuel 18, this is where Amnon is chased down by Joab and killed against David's wishes. Nevertheless, he dies. Verse 17, they took Absalom, cast him into a great pit in the wood, and laid a very great heap of stones upon him, and all Israel fled, every one to his tent. Now, Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's Place. Sounds like a bar. But you'll notice that the passage in 2 Samuel 14 says that he had 3 sons and a daughter. Here it says that in the verse 18:18, that I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. So either when he raised the pillar, he didn't have a son yet, or else his sons got killed. But it's not a contradiction in the King James Bible, right? Okay, but that's how it works. That's a classic contradiction where somebody refuses to see any other explanation. It's just, you know, that's just wrong. It's just wrong. All right, verse 28. I'm in 2 Samuel 14, 28. We'll finish the chapter. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. I mean, Joab's hands are tied and he's tried, but he can't get him to the king to have him in. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. Therefore he said unto his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine. He hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered to Joab, behold, I sent unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still, Now, therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me. Sounds like a good idea. But that's just me. Verse 33. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. And it sounds like a pretty good start to a reconciliation, but it turns out not to be. But we'll have to stop there. Any questions or comments? Just human tragedy, right?